Welcome to the Weight Loss for Healthcare Providers podcast with Delaine MD, the podcast for healthcare professionals struggling to lose weight. If you are a physician, nurse, or other clinician looking to permanently shed those pounds, gain control, stop emotional eating, and live a fuller, more authentic, and happier life, Dr. Delaine Vaughn offers sustainable strategies and the support you need to overcome the challenges that undermine permanent weight loss. Hello, welcome back to the podcast. This is the Delaine MD podcast. If you're a first-time listener, feel free to go back and listen to the other podcasts. There's a lot of information there. Also, if you have been listening to these podcasts and you enjoy them, it's easier for first-time listeners to come and find the podcast if you have left a rating and a review. So if you would be so kind and review the podcast, give it a rating, I would appreciate it. For those who've already done that, I want to say thank you. So, of course, summer's here and everybody knows this is my favorite time of year. I can see the beautiful blue Kansas sky outside and the sun shining and the trees have leaves on them. It just makes my heart warm. It's good stuff. So I'm enjoying the summer and I hope you guys are too. I will tell you, with summer comes children at home, which means I have kids at home right now while I'm recording a podcast. So anything could happen. I don't believe they will walk into the area where I'm recording, but you may hear a large commotion. It's totally a kid, and hopefully they're not hurt. This is the first podcast that I've recorded without another adult downstairs to keep them at bay, so we'll see how this goes. Today, I want to talk about why practice is so important. Why putting the time and effort into learning a new skill, like weight loss, like how to eat in a way that serves your body, I am going to talk to you about why it is so important. As human beings, we expect quick results. Not only do we expect them, frequently we feel that we are entitled to them. You guys have all heard me talk about the question that I get from prospective clients frequently, which is, how long is this going to take? How much weight can I expect to lose during your program? When am I going to lose all my weight? Which, you know, what I hear when you ask me that is, when can I throw in the towel? When can I stop trying? When is it too much? When can I give up? That's really what I hear when I get asked that question. And the reason is because we expect that we will see results quickly. We will see results in a fixed amount of time. And if we don't see those results in the time frame that we think is acceptable, then we get to quit. And of course, our brain loves it when we do that, because then we don't have to continue to try things new and we don't have to continue to work at something that's uncomfortable. We can go back to doing what we've always done, which our brain loves and we find comfortable. What our brain loves to believe is in the savant syndrome. Hopefully you know what I'm talking about with the savant syndrome. If you ever watched the movie Rain Man, Rain Man is a movie that's based on a character or on a person that had this quote-unquote savant syndrome. So savant syndrome is a human being or a person who has significant mental disabilities but demonstrates abilities in a certain area that far exceed the average person's abilities in that area. I haven't watched Rain Man in a very long time, but I think that that individual, his area of ability was in numbers. And I can't remember whether it was counting numbers or I can't remember, but he could rattle off numbers constantly. When we look at people who are masters of certain areas or masters of certain things, we have the tendency to believe that they all got this way with minimal effort. You guys may have heard me speak of Michael Jordan and some of the other podcasts, but lots of people look at Michael Jordan, who is the basketball king, right? And think that he was just gifted. He was born naturally gifted to be a fabulous basketball player. And maybe there were some natural abilities that he was given at birth that other people like me won't have, like his height, for example. But what people don't realize is that Michael Jordan was actually cut from the basketball team when he tried out for JV basketball in his freshman or sophomore year. I can't remember which year. But he actually did not make the team. That experience led to Michael Jordan spending the next year meticulously and faithfully honing his basketball skills. He practiced basketball daily, and he got to a point where he was proficient enough at the skills of basketball to be able to go and secure himself a spot on his varsity basketball team. When we think about becoming a master at something, it is not savant syndrome. This is not something that you're going to be born with necessarily. It takes years of practice. We can become proficient at something, but the years of practicing doing that same skill over and over is what gets you to be a master. I could possibly become proficient at shooting free throws in basketball. I don't know that I have enough years left in my life to become become a master at it, right? Maybe I could. I don't know. I'm not really interested in becoming a master of basketball or basketball free throws. But you can become proficient, but mastery takes much longer. And it takes dedicated practice, right? It takes coming back and doing it over again, seeing what you did wrong, looking for what you did wrong, and then looking for ways that you're going to improve it. So what's really got me started thinking about this is my Silly Meditation app. If you haven't listened to my podcast on meditation, take a minute, go back and listen to it. I really think that meditation is so important to learning how to manage your mind. The meditation app that I like to use is called Calm, and it keeps track of how many days I meditate in a row. So currently, as of today, whatever day I'm recording this, June 13th, 2019, I am at 171 days of consecutive daily meditation. Each day, I get up, I sit quietly, I face the sun because I like that. That's not something you have to do to meditate. You don't have to do any of this to meditate, but this is my practice. And then I turn inward towards my breath. I turn away other thoughts that float into my brain, and I sit. I just sit for about 10 minutes every day. I do this on days when I'm on vacation. Those 171 days that I've done this in a row included vacation days that me and my family of 5 kids and 1 husband would go and stay in a cabin that we would go for climbing adventures from, and I would have to find a way to sit, face the sun, quietly turn inward towards my breath, and sit there for 10 minutes, turning away all other thoughts and distractions that come into my mind. This means also that on days that I forgot to set my alarm the night before and I would wake up frantic, I still got up, got on my bum, faced the morning sun, turned my focus inwards for 10 minutes, and turned away all thoughts that tried to intrude on that. This means I did it at Christmas. This means I did it on days that I forgot. What? Days that I forgot? How can you forget and still do it? This means that before it became a habit for me to get out of bed, get on my bum, and face the sun, that I would forget, right? I'd get up and do my other routine. The routine that I had before meditating every morning was my habit. On those days, whatever time it was that I realized I forgot to meditate, I would then have to set myself a reminder so that when I got home that evening, that I could sit on my bum for 10 minutes, face the sun in the west now, and meditate so that I could keep that streak going, right? That means that there were some days that I practiced when I would do it in the evening, when I would forget and I would have to do it later in the day. My mind was already racing. There were kids already awake. The dogs were awake and running around. Those days were certainly harder days to meditate than the days where I just roll out of bed and nobody's awake and it's just me. Me and my breath and the morning sun coming up. Those days that I forgot were much harder to get at it and do it, but I did it. And now I get to look at it. Look at me. I'm 9 days away from 6 months of daily meditation. So I was looking at this and feeling like a champion every morning when my app counts another day. But before I go straining any muscles, patting myself on the back from a meditation routine, I have to tell you about what happened 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, my meditation app sent me a notification. My year-long subscription had expired. I was at about 160 days of meditation at that point, but I had to renew my app, my subscription, to continue to use the app in the way I'd grown accustomed to using it. Seemed fair enough. As I was going through the process of renewing this app, it dawned on me. That's 365 days that I've had this app. And I'm patting myself on the back and taking pride in my daily meditation streak. It's only been the last 160-ish days. That meant for over 200 days, I had not mastered meditating every single day, right? Maybe I'd go a stretch of 6 or 7 days and then I'd miss a day. Or maybe I'd go a stretch of 14 days and then I'd miss a day. Or maybe I'd go a stretch of 18 days and I'd miss a day. But it took over 200 days of me practicing a daily meditation app before it finally took, right? Less than half of the time I'd had that meditation app, I hadn't been using it every day. And to add insult to injury, I'd used the free version of the app for many months prior to purchasing the year subscription to the purchased app. So it took me more than 7 months, probably closer to 10 or 12 months, to build that daily meditation practice. The daily meditation practice where I won't miss it for anything. Somewhere between 205 days and 365 days of practicing daily meditation is what I needed to finally develop a habit that was daily. Initially, I was like a little shocked and taken back, you know, almost offended. Like, what the heck? Why did this happen this way? But then it dawned on me, it takes this for everything, right? Everything that you get good at, that you master at, or that you learn to love takes tons of investment in practicing before it becomes something that you've mastered. Michael Jordan's a prime example. Other examples, IV starts for my nursing colleagues, right? Fully cath starts. For those nurses that do codes, running a proficient code, you didn't do that the first time you ran a code. Intubations, arterial sticks, all of these took tons of practice before you were proficient and even more practice before you were masters of it, right? I can't tell you when I mastered my meditation practice, when it became daily. I can't remember. Similarly, I can't tell you when I mastered the IV start. But I know that there's somewhere along the way when I realized that there was no reason to keep looking towards achieving the goal of being a daily meditator. There was no reason to keep looking towards the goal of being a badass IV starter. But instead, I would just focus on doing the job, on getting it done, on just doing it. I found when I stopped trying to reach that goal, somewhere in there was when I actually started becoming good at it. I started becoming proficient at it, and I started becoming a master of it. I saw this with my IV starts. There was a time, and I don't know when, but I took on the mindset that no matter what, I'm going to get that IV. I'm not coming out of that room until I get that IV. Somewhere in the practice, I stopped looking for another nurse to start my IV, a more experienced nurse that could come and save me from missing the IV again, because I was terrified of it. I would even justify this. Well, I don't want to keep sticking these people, causing them pain. That doesn't seem right. I would like justify why I would go look for somebody else. Somewhere in the practice of this, I stopped doing that. And instead, I would just go in and get the job done because I had other things to do. And then something happened. People started coming to me when they needed help starting an IV. They started coming to me when they had hard IV starts. What? Am I really that good? Do I really have it? I mean, I'll look, but I don't know. But you know what? I was that good. That's when I found my swagger. And you know what? I loved my time in the ER starting IVs. I'd walk into a room and I would know, I'm going to get this done. And the really enjoyable part was when I was a doctor. I'll tell you, I would go to small hospitals. I would moonlight during residency. And all the staff was always wanting to be on their A game. They want, you know, they never know when they're going to get one of those grumpy moonlighting doctors in who are going to be short-tempered and yell at them. So they'd all try to do their very best job. And so we'd get these 90-year-old patients and we'd bring them in and they'd need to be admitted. And hell, they might be dialysis patients, so you couldn't use one arm. Then they would see me walking down the hall. And apparently they would hear like the Star Wars Darth Vader death march as I was coming down the hall, because they'd send the charge nurse to meet me and tell me, oh my gosh, all the nurses on the floor, we've all tried. We've called the ER nurses up here. They've all tried. We're calling in extra staff. We're calling in a nurse from home. She's really good. She's going to be able to get the IV. We're so sorry, Dr. Vaughn, we couldn't get the IV. How wonderful it really was to be able to say, call the nurse at home, tell her to stay home. Let's go and do this. And I would walk in that room and I'd be able to get that line. It felt wonderful. Man, that's a dopamine hit. You can't get anywhere else. I'm just telling you. That was a feeling that couldn't be replaced. That was such an ego boost. There was nothing that could replace it. It felt great. Who wouldn't want to feel that way? So for me, the same thing really has happened with meditation. I wouldn't give up my morning meditation for anything. There's no vacation that I'm going to give myself a pass and be like, no, I don't want to do my morning meditation. There isn't a no consequence bag of M&Ms out there that I would give up my morning meditation to get. I love that time that I get in the morning. I need that time that I get in the morning. It's part of who I am. It's part of me. And you know what? It's no longer a chore anymore. Nobody has to make me get up and remind me to do my meditation that I'd really rather be doing something else or getting ready for work or getting ready for whatever I've got going on. It's no longer a chore. This is what I want to do. So what I want to offer you guys today is, what if our weight loss became the same way? What if that were possible? What if you recognize that you're not going to master the new skill of eating in a different way, in a way that serves your body, in 2 weeks? You're not going to get to a point in 2 or 4 or 8 weeks where you love everything about that new skill that you're mastering, that you're practicing. What if you are looking for ways to enjoy the practice, to enjoy the journey, to enjoy what you are doing right now? Because if you could learn a way to enjoy that, it's no longer work, right? But that's not what we want. We want the savant syndrome experience, right? We all want to be quick and easy. We want it to just master immediately. What I'm here to offer you today, there are no savants. Like, even the savant syndrome, they question whether that even really exists, no matter what the Rain Man movie says. That's a unicorn. That's a flying carpet. That's magic. It doesn't exist. That's a fantasy. What exists is Michael Jordan, who was kicked off his JV, or not accepted, sorry, he wasn't accepted on his JV team for basketball, who then put practice hour upon practice hour upon practice hour into his basketball game. And he is now Michael frickin' Jordan. That did not come. They're just natural luck. People who master any skill do it through practice, through always looking at ways that they can do it better, through commitment, even when it's hard, even when they don't want to get up and practice basketball, even when they'd rather get an extra 10 minutes of sleep instead of getting on their bum and facing the sun and doing their meditation. Even when I wanted to give the IV start to another nurse because I was terrified I'd miss it again. You did it anyway. You do it anyway. You practice doing it anyway. And then you learn to love the practice, and suddenly the practice becomes the point. Why? Because you love it. You love every bit about it. You find patience with yourself, and over time, you become a master of the skill. So what if any time you were eating cottage cheese and carrots, and you were looking at them as amazing instead of seeing that it's not pizza? What if when you were eating fruit and yogurt instead of ice cream, you were wanting the fruit and yogurt and no longer wanting the ice cream? Wouldn't that make your weight loss efforts so much easier? So how do you think you're going to get there? The first step, you don't bitch and moan about what you're doing it. You don't bitch and moan about what you don't get all the time. That's one way that you start to get to a place that you love what you're actually doing. You can get to a point where you love those things that serve your body, but you get there by doing what you know you should over and over again. Eating the things that you know serve your body daily, and you do it over and over. And eventually, you start to love the way you feel when you eat those foods that serve your body. You start to love the way that food tastes, and you start to recognize that those processed foods, when you go back and try them, they don't taste good. You start to love everything about it, and you know what you probably love the most? The results that you end up seeing on the scale. I'll tell you, I never in a million years thought that I would not love Diet Coke. I just always thought that I would love it. It was the nectar of the gods. That's what I would call it. I loved that stuff. But I've tried Diet Coke after months and months and months, like 18 months of practicing drinking other things and not drinking Diet Coke. And what I'm here to tell you, I don't love it. I don't love it at all, not one bit, which is interesting. It's also interesting that nothing's really ever filled that spot that I had for Diet Coke, right? I mean, I like water. I like LaCroix. Don't judge me. I do. I like it. I like Dasani sparkling water that's flavored, which they use that term liberally. It's not flavored. It smells like fruit. It doesn't taste like anything. I like them. They're nice. They're not the way I liked Diet Coke. But I'll tell you, not drinking the Diet Coke and practicing not drinking the Diet Coke to a point where drinking the Diet Coke is no longer amazing, and I don't really like the Diet Coke, makes it so much easier to say no thank you to Diet Cokes. The same thing's happened with M&Ms. I like M&Ms, they're fine. I don't love them anymore, and they make me feel sick when I eat them, even just a few now. Makes it so much easier to say, just not into it today. How interesting is that? Practicing not doing something that didn't serve my body made me love not doing that thing, which makes it so much easier to not do it. So I want you guys to go out and try this. I want you to see how it works. I want you to see how committing to practicing for 6 weeks or 12 weeks, something that doesn't serve your body, commit to it and then do it even when it's not fun. See what happens at the end. See how you feel about that thing that you have been fighting against doing for so long. And then, of course, I want to hear about it. Send me your comments, send me your thoughts. Any questions you have, holler at me. I will talk to you guys next week. Bye bye. You've been listening to the Delane MD Weight Loss for Healthcare Providers podcast with Dr. Delane Vaughn. To learn more about life and weight coaching with Dr. Delane Vaughn, visit www.delanemd.com.
The bus! Ha ha! Ho ho! Scheiße, wo ist mein